Friends, I'm turning to Psalm 54. Psalm 54. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. And friends, we still are in our studies about prayer, and I desire to pick one or two, actually, maybe only one. There's one psalm that would reflect the life of David, because I wanted some of the prayers of David. You know, there are lots of psalms, but those ones that we can know the circumstances within which David prayed that prayer. And this is one of them. As if you look at the top of it, those small writings there, you see written there to the chief musician on Niginoth. Niginoth is a musical instrument, it seems. Maskil means a psalm of teaching. A psalm of David when the Ziphims or the Ziphites, we told that in 1 Samuel chapter 23 and 26. And I would tell you a little about that just to give a background to the psalm then. So, a psalm of David, when the Ziphims, or the Ziphites, came and said to Saul, "Doth not David hide himself with us?" And so these Ziphites betrayed David, and the psalm was composed, or the Spirit of the Lord stirred it in David's heart during that time. And so, it's a very suitable one to think about, because at least we know their background, what caused the psalmist to pen these things, the Spirit of the Lord helping him. And so David, at this time, as the psalm suggests to us, at this time, he was running away from Saul. Saul, you know, because David had become an exalted man in Israel, and Saul himself had become very much afraid of his own place on the throne, he had decided to persecute David as he was going after David. And the very first time that they came very close is in 1 Samuel chapter 23. In this place, these people, the Ziphites, had gone to Saul and told Saul that David is hiding in a wilderness. It's a place called Jeshimon. And so they went to Saul to tell him. And so they simply told Saul, "You come, I will simply hand him over to you. We'll help you to get him." And so Saul went. At the time, David had only about 600 men with him. Saul went with about 3,000. The Bible calls them chosen men. So very, very experienced soldiers. And David has only these ordinary persons trained by himself, more like a militia, with him. And so Saul got there. And the thing was that he had almost arrested David, because the Bible tells us that on that hill where David was hiding, it happened that David was running along one side of the hill, and Saul was also pursuing him at the other side. And so David was really within reach of Saul. And you know what the Lord did? Saul heard that the Philistines had actually invaded his land. So somebody came and told Saul, "Saul, the Philistines have invaded your land." And so Saul left off David and then went to take care of the Philistines, and David got out of hand. You can almost feel that in the psalm, when David feels a sense of relief. We do not know which of the two. It seems because the second encounter actually ended in Saul's humiliation. So you do not know which one, whether in between them that the Spirit of the Lord led David to write these psalms, but at least we will feel some of the elements in the verses. In the second situation, we don't know once again why David still came to that Jeshimon. After he had fled, he came back to this Jeshimon, in this place again, in the same wilderness, and these same Ziphites went again to tell Saul. They went to tell Saul that, "Hey, the man is here again." And so Saul came. This time, when Saul came, I think he got there at night, as he decided to sleep. And so in the plain, Saul had a trench made for him, and he slept in the trench. And he had all his military men around him. His military general was Abner at the time. And so Abner was sleeping very close to Saul, and you have all the 3,000 soldiers around. Saul was making sure that he doesn't really fall prey to David. In fact, he had done so in chapter 24, when David had almost killed him in the cave. I'm sure you know that, when he had mercy upon Saul. So Saul, it seems, this time was going to be very careful, so he doesn't really fall into the arms of David. So he had all these soldiers around him, and so they slept. And the Bible tells us that God made a deep sleep to fall upon them all. And so David watched and saw that really Saul had come after him. David must have been a very bold young man. And he went with his friend called Abishai. And so they went there and they tiptoed around all these persons. And they saw Saul sleeping there. And Abishai said, "Sir, now this is your time. You allow me to really pin him down only once. I wouldn't do it twice. Let me only do it once." And incidentally, unfortunate for Saul, he himself has stuck his spear right at his neck. Closes, it's easy, isn't it? He makes a suggestion so easily. And so the spear was close to his neck. And then David said, "No." You know, David had learned his lesson, chapter 24. How did you have to get into that? He had learned his lesson, the first chapter 24. He said, "No, you do not touch God's anointed. You leave him. A time will come for him to die, or you may go down to war and perish, but let it not be our hands. You take his spear and let us go." They took Saul's spear, got his water bottle, we'll call it today, and then David went. And then when David had gone far away, he stood on a high hill, and they shouted out to Abner. And Abner, where are you? And Abner woke up and said, "But Abner, that's why you must be dead. You must be dead by now. Because you failed to protect the king. And so somebody came around to kill the king, and you were not there to protect him." And then Saul heard David's voice. And Saul got up and began to speak with David. He was all of shame, humiliated, now confessing to David, "I know you will be king one day." And what was beautiful was that, and that could be a verse here, as I'm telling you, it could be why David was inspired to write that verse there in, I think, verse 4, when we come to that. Because whilst David was in the wilderness, Saul's son Jonathan, you remember, his son Jonathan, Saul, his father, had disgraced him in public because of David. He had almost killed his son Jonathan, because he saw that Jonathan was supporting David. And so disgraced him. And so Jonathan wasn't happy at all in the palace. And so when David was in the wilderness, Jonathan has slipped out of the court and gone to David in the forest and strengthened his arm, renewed his covenant with him, and even told him, "You will be king. My father knows it. My father knows you became one day. And when you become a king, put me at your right hand. Let me sit by you." Jonathan saying this. And so Saul actually fell before David. And because David tells us, because his trust was in the Lord. Even though Saul had all the national military strength within, yet these are nothing at all before the Lord. Now David begins the psalm. With this background, I think you can understand what we call the psalm, the majesty of prayer. The majesty of prayer. May the Lord help us. My dear friends, I've not gotten into the verse. I only want to urge each one of us. Oh, if you do all you can to recover your life of prayer, if you've left it in shambles, do all you can. There's such majesty in prayer. Why? You'll soon see it in the verses. So let's get into the verse now. And you see right how the first verse there. "Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength." So this sounds like somebody really cornered, isn't it? And so probably it was at the time of the first pursuit in chapter 23 of 1 Samuel, as it fits it there. But we cannot be absolutely sure. "Save me, O God, by thy name." What does he mean? You know that when we talk about God's name in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, it's a reference to his attributes. So David is like saying, "O Lord, save me by thine attributes." In other words, bring to bear upon my situation your entire nature. Everything you are, come along to save me. Isn't that amazing? So that God, in all your glorious attributes, you are the God of all power, you are the God of all knowledge, of wisdom, of sovereign majesty. Bring it all to bear upon my salvation by delivering me. This is so great to ask, but that's exactly what prayer is. When we go to God, we're going to God as a glorious being, not an aspect of Him, but His entire being is available for us. And so this is what makes prayer so majestic. Save me, O God, by Thy name. So bring to bear all Thy glorious attributes, so that Thou would deliver me. And judge me by Thy strength. Judge me, you may also understand that to be plead my case. That's what it means. Now, plead my case by Thy strength. Let your power come to show my situation as it is like, and to be sure that Thou art on my side. And so this is David's request, and it is quite a strong thing. If you remember once again, I do not know whether you can see how frightening it would have been. Here was David with his only ordinarily trained men, about 600 with him in this wilderness. And then before he realized, he's surrounded with Saul and his 3,000 men. As he found himself the very first time running away, literally right ahead of Saul. He could easily be caught within any time. Can you feel the fright? He's not come to this point, apart from the time when Saul had attempted to pin him to the wall when he was in the palace. He had never come this close. How frightening it would have been. Why, you can understand. Come, defend my case with all Thy strength. This is what David is asking for. And surely we know that God heard him. And then verse 2. Hear my prayer, O God. Give ear to the words of my mouth. Why is he stressing this? He's meaning the prayer only. This is all he can do at this time. His utter dependence upon God coming in to help him. This is a case he could not hope for any other way out except the Lord alone would help him. So it suggests his strong dependence upon the Lord and his total dependence, therefore, upon prayer. David shows this. My dear friends, it teaches us a few things I want us to draw our attention to. It shows us, dear friends, this wonderful thing we always say. When we are going to the place of prayer, we have to reflect much upon the attributes of God. Have it right before you and reflect much upon that. It mightily strengthens faith. It mightily reduces whatever trouble you seem to have, and it puts them in their proper place. You go before a God who made all things and who sustains everything by His own almighty power. Reflect upon this. Reflect upon, I've mentioned this here before, please cultivate the habit, even in your own private devotions, to make sure you do not stick to the same aspect of the attribute of God in praise. Make sure you are covering the entire ground with time. So if in your morning devotion you were praising Him for His holiness and wisdom, make sure you change that in the evening. Cover something else. It helps you remember all His attributes regularly and to praise Him as we should. And then it helps in overcoming what we some often call mental idolatry in prayer. Well, people in attempt to want to concentrate have to imagine somebody sitting somewhere and listening or something like that in their heads. They can't. And know that that's why Roman Catholics said they were creating those statues in their churches. They said it is to help people's faith. It helps them to focus. So here you are, you have a Mary there or something. So it helps you to focus on, your mind on that. And there are people who may not need a physical thing, but they create an imaginary one. It is the same, you see. And so what do you do? Reflect upon the attributes of God. Keep that in mind. Reflect upon it, because God has revealed himself to us by his attributes. What he said about himself. That's how God has revealed himself to us. And so we approach him in the same way. And then it's so greatly helpful, friends. Just as I mentioned, pull yourself back sometimes. And then think once again. I am going before such a God who owns everything. This is a long known thing, but recently there was this thing on television about the world as it is. You know, there's this constant NASA thing going into the space, things like this. And what was striking was they were showing the what they call the galaxies and how the universe is like, or aspect of it are like. And the man was comment was saying that so the Earth is like a speck in the entire universe. I don't know. It hasn't left my mind. It keeps making a strong impression on me. It's a speck. So the Earth on which we dwell is like a grain of sand at the seashore, in around the whole beach. That's what we are. And God takes interest in us. The God glorious in majesty takes interest in these funny, petty creatures as we are. And so when you have any difficulty and you are going to the place of prayer, and you just remember, this is the Father I'm going to. This is the God I approach. It dwells your troubles, doesn't it? It dwells things. You're dealing with people who appear very stupendously difficult. You say, wow, why? The heart of man is in the hands of God, and he turns it with whosoever he chooses, as the book of Proverbs tells us. And so everything begins to become too so small in your eye, and nothing frightening at all. And that's what the majesty of prayer is about. The praying saint is going to seek the help of such a glorious God. And so David sensed when he was pleading, when Saul was pursuing him, God, save me by thine attributes. Make them count for me. And it encourages us, friends. And then come to verse 3. For strangers are risen up against me. Why is he calling these Ziphites strangers? These Ziphites, as far as we know, were Israelites. And so why is he now calling them strangers? Well, because they were behaving strangely. They were behaving as if they were strangers to what is happening in Israel. Don't they know that it is Saul who is pursuing David? Don't they know that David has not committed any offense against Saul? They're behaving as strangers. Don't they know what a king is supposed to do to members of his country? So they saw the whole king gets up and with a 3,000 army goes after a young man and a small army. Don't everybody know that this cannot be the kind of thing the king is called to be doing? Can they see? Can they know? Is this fitting for humanity? Is that how you treat the humanity? One time David told Saul, king, you are pursuing a flea, a partridge, a small animal, and you are coming after him. Here is the whole army, you're coming to pursue a small person. What have I done? He was asking him. And then they'd be so angry with a fly, a horse fly, and you wish you could really hit him with a whole chair. Of course, you are likely to miss him because your hands will go slower because the thing is too heavy in your hand. That's the kind of thing David was saying Saul was doing. And so these people are behaving like strangers. They should have seen what is happening. And so David calls them strangers. For strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors, in this case Saul and his court, seek after my soul. They are after me. They want to hurt me. Now, this is one of the things that David often does in his prayers, which is so instructive, because he puts by the inspiration of the Spirit, of course, a weather that very quickly lightens his situation. And this is one of them. They have not set God before them. This is extremely encouraging for David. My dear friends, this week I was one of our young men in Cape Coast came to me because he was very ill with a pain. And so we had talked about how he couldn't get to the hospital and things like that. And so when he came with the hospital results and what he had to do, then I paused and told him, do you pray over this? And he said, yes, Pastor, I do pray about that, but I do not know whether God is punishing me or whether it's a trial. And friends, if you know how God deals with his children, you will appreciate this thing that David makes here. Sometimes nothing is so painful. Sometimes not a trouble you're bearing. You want to know, is it a trial or a punishment? If it is a trial, you bear it gladly, isn't it? If it's a punishment, then you are alarmed. And so if God allows somebody, maybe at workplace, somebody sets his face on you for nothing, he simply doesn't seem to like you. And you want to ask, what have I done? Is it because a sin I committed and God is chastising me via this means? Or it's a trial that must be quietly borne with the help of the Lord. And this is one of the things that if the Lord helps us to see, his soul sends relief. David saw. Yes, saw. Now, let me mention something that Saul did. Let me just turn you to that passage. There's something that Saul did. It's quite crafty. 1 Samuel chapter, I think it's 23. Sorry. 1 Samuel chapter 20. That was when he was pursuing David. I've mentioned the event to you. But just look at something that he did. And it's very crafty. 1 Samuel chapter 23. And then please, let's begin with verse 19. I'll just end at 21. Then came up the Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood and in the hill of Hakilah, which is in the south of Jeshimon? Then look at what Saul said. It's what he said that is quite crafty. Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hands. Listen to Saul's response in verse 21. And Saul said, blessed be the Lord, for ye have compassion on me. You know what Saul is saying in effect? Oh, what a wonderful thing you've done. May God bless you. May God bless you. Because you've been so sympathetic with me. You've been so kind. God bless you. God bless you for helping me hate another. Saul is getting confused. And usually this kind of confusion comes. Here is somebody who takes the Lord's name in vain and he thinks he's doing the Lord's will. Like the Lord Jesus Christ said, a time will come when he that persecutes you will think he was doing the will of the Lord. And he makes you confused. If it is the will of the Lord, then what's my state like? Again, it was like when Nehemiah and his people were building. And then, in order for the enemies to get Nehemiah to stop his work, one of the charges was that, hey, you Nehemiah, you are disobeying the king. You are not being obedient to the king. Nehemiah had been a very obedient man. He said, for that sake, the king sent him to Jerusalem to build a wall. Am I disobeying the king? That would have really cut into the heart. But Nehemiah had to be very clear of what he was doing to be able to stand firm and say, no, no, we will listen to you. Now, it's a help, and David obtains that in prayer. So whilst David is seeing these people as strangers, he's helped to see that They have not set God before them. Saul, who takes God's name there in chapter 23. And these Ziphites that are helping Saul, they are not really doing the will of the Lord. They are not really serving God's cause. I am aware. I'm aware of that. It is so relieving to know that what I am suffering is not because I've committed some sin and God is punishing me. If that's not the case, then it boosts so much courage. Just look at therefore verse 4. David follows it up so beautifully. Behold, God is mine helper. You see, once he's sure of us, he's so bold. Behold, and the weather is strong. Look, look, look. Fix your eyes upon the matter. God is my helper. The Hebrew word that is translated helper is beautiful. It makes us suspect once again. David may have written the psalm during the first pursuit. Because the word that is translated helper means to surround. And you see, yes, Saul and his men almost surrounding David. And David is thinking, God is my help. God is the one that surrounds me. It makes me remember once again, my dear friends, you remember in remember the days of Elisha the prophet. The Syrians were coming for Elisha, and it was Elisha's servant who saw the army first. There was such a number, innumerable company of people. And when Elisha's servant looked into the window and saw, he said that, "Master, what shall we do?" You know what Elijah did, I'm sure. He said, "A God, open the eyes of the servant," so he says. And when the Lord opened the servant's eye, he saw such a large company of angels surrounding Elisha. And then the servant understood. Friends, when we know that our troubles are not because of offenses we've committed, but God has permitted them in our way, it emboldens our prayer. We go to God, not with the shame in our faces. We go as children going to seek strength to bear. We go to Him so that we may be strengthened to cope properly in times of that difficulty, so we don't sin against Him. We are sure of that. God is not before them. How did David know? If these people would not do things as God has said must be done, we know God is not with them. Friends, I hope I've mentioned this kind of thing to you, friends. If somebody is troubling you at the office or wherever, watch against responding in a way that a Christian shouldn't, or God will not be with you. He will be with you if you will fight his battles his way. If you wouldn't fight his battles his way, he will not fight with you. Why? Because if he did and the victory came, you will applaud yourself. Fight as his way. And then he will be glorified. As if it is somebody who is really not willing to follow the ways of the Lord. You know, God is not with him. And therefore, he's not strong at all. This is what gave David courage at once. You remember? I'm sorry to be reading this a lot into it. Our passage is so short. And you remember what gave David courage before Goliath? A young man comes from his house and comes to this army of Israel facing the Philistines on the other side. Goliath comes to the top of the hill and he begins to boast. And he begins to talk big about himself and what he can do. And he really defies the army of Israel. And David walks among the Israelite soldiers and he hears them saying, and he tells David, "Do you see what that man is doing? Saul is saying, anybody who could fight him, he will give him a wife for free, and his father and her family won't pay any taxes." And the passage suggests that David is surprised. David says, "What? What are we giving to the person?" David wasn't saying that because he was interested. He's actually surprised. Because he added by saying, this man is defying the army of the living God. And Saul is giving material benefits to motivate people to fight him. This man is already a finished man because he's fighting against God. And as such, anybody, I'm reading into the passage, anybody who faces him will simply conquer him. This is how faith works, you see. If somebody is not being obedient to the Lord, you know the Lord is not with him. If a worldling, an unbeliever, simply because of your faith in the Lord and your desire to walk with the Lord is standing against you, it is the least of the troubles to bear on earth, friends. It is the least because you know he has not God before him. And therefore he's as weak as water. He cannot do anything at all. But you see, what that which frightens us is because I am not a person of prayer. I don't pray that much. I have not cultivated the habit of really coming before the Lord with the troubles of life and exercising total dependence upon him. If we did, we would not be afraid of these things, because when we see through it, if this is actually against the will of the Lord, then this is no much. This is nothing. This can easily be just swept aside easily. It's not a difficult case at all. But God grants this blessing to pray in hearts, to pray in saints, to pray in persons who show their sincere dependence upon the Lord. And so, friends, David is so courageous about this, and he tells us all, my dear friends, oh, let us fight only God's battle in God's way. Otherwise, he will leave us to shame. He will not support us at all. Verse 4, behold, God is mine helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. The second part of the verse is quite instructive. Behold, God is mine helper. I mentioned to you, he is the one that surrounds me. He is the one that secures my situation. But look at what follows there. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. This is what makes us think that probably, if not him alone, it may have included Jonathan. There are people who uphold my soul, and God is with them. It once again opens up something in prayer so beautiful. One of the things we experience much by the grace of God in prayer is how God brings about very helpful friends. Why, Christians all over the world don't say that often. How God brings along friends. Friends you have never known. And they come and they are such a help. Sometimes they may be there forever or as long as life is. Sometimes they may be there for a short while. But it's the Lord who brings them. And David, because he's sure it is God with him, he says that the Lord is with them that uphold my soul. It shows us something of very good friends and who they are. Very good friends are interested in our souls. They are concerned about how we stand before God. When we are referred to our souls, we are speaking of ourselves as people who stand before God. Friends, do you have godly friends? Do you have godly friends? If you do you pray for them? Do you pray for them that they will be useful? Only God can make friends useful to us. Do you know that? Those who are closest to us are those that can easily lead us astray. We will put up resistance if an idea is coming from a total outsider. But let it come from somebody so close, we are most likely to take it in without thinking. Do we pray for those that are closer and desire that the Lord will make them a blessing to us and us a blessing to them? But friends, this is one of the things the Lord would do, because you see, godliness would often bring about loneliness. But the Lord will bring very worthy friends. They may not be many, but they'll be solid friends. They'll be those you know, we all want to please the same God. You know the Apostle Paul's experience where he often suffered the desertion of people he had once trusted. Apostle Paul had trusted, if you read his epistles, he had trusted among Demas. In one epistle, he's really counting him among the men he's going to send to a church. In another epistle, he's really sad that Demas has deserted him. These things happen every time. We are not surprised about them. The Savior told us it would happen. But this is the thing. We must really often pray for godly friends. And if we are somehow ready to truly value them and pray to the Lord that He will make them useful for us. But whatever our case may be, if we put our trust in the Lord and are constantly in prayer, well, He will send along people that will be amazingly helpful to us. If you permit me this, my dear friends, I remember, you know, when we started the work in Cape Coast, there are a number of things usually people do not know, but when we had started, Tabernacle was helping us, supporting us, but evidently we had too many needs than any one church could help. Of course, what do you do? You have to trust the Lord and pray over that and things like this. And then I remember, that was, I think the same year, 2000, or was it 2001 or so, I was at home. And then I received a call from a pastor in England, where I had preached there when I was there, Pastor Trevor. Some of you may know him. So Pastor Trevor called me and said that I have a friend who had been a member of our church, but he's moved away to Scotland. And he needs somebody to help him, because somebody has written him from Ghana and is telling him about how he wants to start a work. And the way the person is speaking, the friend is concerned that this may be a genuine need, but only the person is able to describe it well. At the same time, the tone of the letter suggested that the person may be a charismatic. So the friend was worried. He didn't know want to support a charismatic work. At the same time, he didn't want to lightly push away anything. Of course, he's a very dedicated believer. He upholds the principle that you don't just set aside needs that come before you lightly. As a child of God, you weigh it carefully and see whether the Lord will help, let you help. And so that's what he was doing. As Trevor was telling me, so can you go and see the person and speak to him and then anything? And then I went. Met the person in Tema somewhere. That was the first time I got to that place and met with the person. Obviously, an extreme charismatic. Because and he sent me the letter. The letter included wanted instruments and things like this. I was so amazed that the brother was so light-hearted that in spite of somebody requiring instruments, he still wanted to give me a hearing before he made a conclusion. The so wonderful Christian virtue to display. And so I sent him the report, and then there he sends to the Pastor Trevor that he should ask us that whether he'll be able to help that person, because he's now going to think through and things like that, whether he's able to help that person or not, can he support our work? I've never met him before. We've never spoken before. But the only time I met him was when 2008 I went to School of Theology and met him. The first time. And what a tremendous help he had been up to date. The Lord sends around. And my dear friend, I'm not talking about material help alone. He is a powerful example and a powerful encourager in our work. That's the kind of friends, you see, the Lord sends. And we only have to pray for them. You need good friends. You need godly friends. And they don't come easily. They are rare. They are rare species. They are not extinct. But God will send some, pray for them. And when God brings them, value them, pray for them, and then the Lord would make them uphold your soul. There will be those that will be so much with you. As I said, they will not just be friends around you because they sit down with you and talk. They would always be pointing you to the things of the Lord. That's the kind of friends you want, isn't it? So that when I am weak and I'm falling, he'll be there and say, come on, brother, keep on. I pray for you. I bear you up before the Lord. Would you read that material? Would you read that to stir your heart up? The next time it is a stand, it's growing weaker and you play the same roles. This is why God provided for godly friends. And so David is absolutely right when he says, behold, God is mine helper. You see, he attributes the glory to God first. It's God who is helping me. But God will make people instrumental to my help also. You see, it combines it so beautifully. God uses him an instrument, but we acknowledge his hand first and chiefly, you see. And so this is what he does. Behold, God is mine helper. And the same God, the Lord is with them that uphold my soul. The human instruments will come from him, and they'll be such precious, precious friends who will point you to the Lord and will constantly be a challenge. My dear friends, if you desire any other kind of friends than that, well, beware. Because then you are really digging your own spiritual downfall. They will pull you down. You won't be able to walk with the Lord. They will bring the suggestions. Oh, friends, I don't want to dwell on this for too long. But let us pray that the Lord sends us such ones. So even prayer keeps us for those, isn't it? What majesty prayer is. It brings in every blessing. And then he makes the statement, it's an affirmation of faith, verse 5. He shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off in thy truth. He asks that in thy truth so that you know that it is not a kind of a vengeful spirit. David is not filled with vengeful spirit. Oh Lord, cut them off. As the charismatic pastors want us to pray. I ask for fire upon their heads and this kind of wicked desires. We don't do anything like that. But the truth is this, that God himself deals with those who trouble his people. He will always do that. So we leave matters in his hands. So we learn to be calm and able to take things in our own hands. We only watch for our duty and do our duty according to God's will and mind and leave the rest with him. Verse 6, see the effect of the prayer. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good, friends. Can I tell you point blank, it will be very difficult for you to sustain a sincere interest in a dedicated life without a life of prayer. How can I live so that my devotion to the Lord is kept constantly sincere, willing and free, so that it doesn't seem like a compulsion? So it's not like I'm being dragged or that I want to do it for public impression. If I fail, people say, oh, after all, that person isn't sincere or consistent. That's all that is driving me. How can you maintain constant energy so that you freely and gladly and willingly continue to give yourself not half but wholly to the things of the Lord? Where would the strength come from? It comes from the throne room of prayer. The praying person will be finished. Friends, I tell you, you cannot bear. I think of the pastoral work. You say that what human being will ever attempt such a work if he's not given the capacity for prayer? As it is one of the things I urge young persons, are you sure the Lord is calling you into his service? Watch and see whether the Lord bestows upon you the spirit of prayer. You will grow in it, but the Lord must impress it upon your heart how much grace of prayer needs to rest upon you. You will collapse along the way. You will capitulate to ideas that you shouldn't have capitulated to. You would easily yield because there's too much pressure and human fear, and you will fall. You can't. No one is strong, Apostle Paul said. Who is sufficient for this work? No one is sufficient. And that is why, you remember the Apostle said, but we will give ourselves to prayer and the word. So, my dear friends, and for us, Sunday school teacher, can I maintain my devotion to the work and interest in the children? So I'm not merely carrying it out mechanically. I must come around otherwise, but I'm sincerely interested. How do I know whether I'm sincerely interested? God is my witness how much I bear these children and these young persons in prayer. And I long for their blessing. We say it is not the service of the Lord. If I do it without longing for blessing, then what are you doing? Then what are you doing? I don't long for blessing. Have you heard that before? Have you heard a fisherman go to the fish, to the sea, and he's not longing for fish? Have you heard that before? A farmer is cultivating his ground. He's not expecting any fruit. Have you seen that before? Here am I, I'm a Sunday school teacher, and I don't long for blessing. I'm only keeping going. Oh, no, God never blesses that. We are filled with longings. The longings may be later, but this is why we are trained in patience. But the longing is always burning in our hearts and is driving us to the place of prayer constantly. How can you maintain a real interest in the children unless you maintain a life of prayer? Otherwise you won't. You can't. It will be a mere superficial work. It will not be owned. Remember, Apostle Paul tells us such a work will not count before the Lord. It will be like the wood and the hay that will burn on the day of judgment. They won't count. They were things done carnally, and they will not be blessed of the Lord. Things that are done with an earnest longing for blessing, because we truly long to see the Savior glorified in our work. Otherwise, it is no work at all. And so, friends, this is the clue. I will freely, or I will gladly sacrifice unto thee. I will do that with such a willing, glad heart. And this is the fruit of his life of prayer he had mentioned already. I will praise thee. Such a one, no doubt, will be a praising person also. He will know so much of answers to prayer that he will be a praising person. Oh Lord, for it is good, or it is fitting. If I become a praising person, isn't it fitting? Because I've seen so much, and thou hast done so much, and approved so much. Our praise becomes warm when there has been so much answers to prayer. Anyway, he himself says it in verse 7. For, this is the reason, for he hath delivered me out of all trouble, and mine eye has seen his desire upon mine enemies. And so you see, he rejoices, and he will give himself to the Lord's servants freely and gladly, with ever longing desire to do more, because God has heard him. Has heard him so much, and has proved so much answer to prayer. And says that statement there, and mine eye has seen his desire upon mine enemies, so that he knows that what God wanted to do, this is not something he wished anybody's his enemy, but this has been God's will already, and God has fulfilled it. So whatever God desires, he will fulfill, whether in our case or in the case of those who disturb us or hurt us, he will fulfill his word. And he will do that to the praying heart. Oh friends, what majesty in prayers. It makes you long that you grow in prayer. Friends, one of the things that helps in the growth of prayer is, we encourage you that don't be discouraged if at the moment you can only, you are a young Christian, and you can only bear with 15 or so minutes in prayer. Don't be discouraged, but never stay there. You are meant to grow and to deepen in that and go forward and forward, so they know what it is to really wrestle with the Lord. They don't come overnight. It comes with the one who truly depends upon the Lord. If my hopes are truly upon the Lord, then if I bring needs before the Lord and there are no answers yet, all I can do is to keep going, isn't it? And as you keep going, and especially if the needs I bring before the Lord are not selfish ones, but there are things that have to do with this kingdom and with the help of others, the conversion of others, the deepening in godliness of others, the growth of his people and the church. If these things are my chief burdens and they drive me more constantly to the place of prayer, they wonderfully mature our prayers. They make us grow in prayer. And then, because if we can sustain selfless prayers for a long time, it is a mark of a truly spirit of prayer upon us. Otherwise, most people are all zealous for prayer because the matter is selfish. But if I can't maintain matters that has to do with the glory of Christ, and even if in my troubles I want to see him glorified in it, and it drives me to him, then I'm surely maturing in prayer. Prayer has this majesty. It brings along these wonderful blessings, and then encounter and experience the Lord. Help us to know an enormous difference. It is such a loss, it is such a self-hurt to allow your prayer life to so weaken and to so collapse. You know, I've said it before, friends, I've got to close. I've said this before. Prayer is one of the things that anybody who sets himself to maintain an earnest prayer life naturally challenges you to live a sincere life. You cannot pretend anymore. You cannot scheme secretly. You cannot be something secretly plots and then maintain a life of prayer. How can it happen? The prayer requires a sincere heart. I cannot be insincere here. And then when I go before God, I pretend sincerity. God would really jolt you, your mind, to that place where you are not sincere. You're really scheming as a worldling. It's a very wonderful, it opens the soul to God. And to let you never keep any secret sin, secret schemings, you will abhor them. You would say, if I do that, then how will I go to him? How would I look him in the face in prayer? And so while you'd be naturally moved to wrestle and plead with him to keep you from that, if you will not be concerned about your prayer life, mark it, that do not take long at all. You will learn the hypocrite's way. You will become a pretender, somebody who only wants outward impressions. You wouldn't want your praise to come from God, as Romans tells us. You wouldn't want your praise to come from God. You would want your praise from men, an impression over people, and merely outward things impress the eye. You would never be a hearty Christian. You won't be an inward person. You will ignore your heart. You will ignore your secret thoughts. And these things will overpower you without even seeing it. Because you don't have an inward life. Prayer is the inward life of that Christian. Because he comes to where God is aware, watches the heart, and knows the secret motions of the heart and the mind. Friend, this is a tremendous blessing and a tremendous help. To be drawn to a life of prayer. And then you will know, friends, we will know so many answers. Our prayers will be answered. God determines to pray, answer our prayers, and we will know the majesty of that life of prayer. May the Lord help us all, friends. May the Lord help us all.